නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Last couple of weeks, actually, we were discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta, which is dealing with contemplation on diets. And there, actually, Buddha discuss about certain meditation aspect, particularly the vipassana meditation aspects, one may come across as one continue. May not be the very initial stages, but as one continues on one's vipassana path, so at a particular point that he or she may come to a kind of a concluding type of decisive direction. Okay, this is what now I have to do. This is what I have to do. So likewise, this themes are recognized and Buddha explained one after the other, and we were going through that. First of all, it was the Four Noble Truths. So after practicing Vipassana, after a particular time, then one may recognize, okay, these are the things that I need to do. Okay, Four Noble Truths is the theme that I have to develop now or understand. And then the next one is based on what we call the acquisitions, using which actually we prepare ourselves, we construct a self, an individual, and that causes a lot of suffering. And once someone recognizes that acquisitions are the problem, acquisitions create suffering, so then he starts abandoning those eye-making, mind-making conceit, so that there are no acquisitions using to generate a personality, but rather recognize that developing such a personality is a cause of suffering. On the other hand, ignorance is another aspect. So whatever suffering arises, that arises because of ignorance. So then how to abandon ignorance is the main theme, is another yogi, where he is so concerned about abandoning ignorance, so that becomes his path. And then volitional activities. So we do various volitional activities, particularly kaya sankhara, vachi sankhara, chitta sankhara, volitional activities based on the body, speech and the mind. And at a particular point, one may understand, okay, I need to stop all these volitional activities. I need to calm them down, abandon all, and to allow the mind to completely come to a standstill. So this is another area, another theme that Buddha explained as the fourth contemplation. Then consciousness. So when the consciousness established and sprout at some particular place, slowly slowly it grows, and that is where it is finding a footing. So this kind of conditioned consciousness, constructed consciousness, creates suffering. So how to stop this process? How to avoid this kind of an established consciousness, constructed consciousness, conditioned consciousness? So if we are able to do that, then there is no suffering. So that is another area, another theme Buddha explained, which is the fifth contemplation. Then contact causes suffering, because contact is the one particular responsible for generating feelings, perceptions, formations. And so contact can be recognized as another root cause of suffering. So if we are able to minimize contact and avoid contact, abandon contact, so then one may not be able to go through any kind of a suffering. So one can maintain a mindset which is not going through such mundane kind of contact. So that is another path Buddha explained here. Then feelings. So this is actually someone can start particularly from the beginning. So recognizing feelings as the cause of suffering. We all know that the painful feelings are of course suffering, but not only that, even the pressurable feelings, equanimous feelings, painful feelings, all are transient, and if we are dependent on any of them, we are going to be suffered. So feelings as a cause of suffering is another theme that one can recognize. So abandoning those feelings and keeping the mind completely at a calm, relaxed, tranquil state is another theme that Buddha explained as the seventh way of abandoning suffering. Then craving. Craving is very well known, general, commonly known cause of suffering. That's the second noble truth, dukkha samudayang ariya satchang. So the craving is the cause of suffering. So abandoning craving is another theme that one may understand. Tanhakkhayo nibbana. So abandonment of all the craving is the nibbana. So now one's particular interest is to abandon craving. Recognizing cravings, various desires, greediness available in the mind, and slowly, slowly abandoning that. Recognizing and abandoning that. So that becomes one's path. That becomes one's direction. So that is another theme Buddha explained as the eighth contemplation. Craving. And then we come to the clinging. Once when mind has certain desire, craving, it leads to clinging, grasping. So once grasped, now you are hooked up with, you are hold on to, and now you are going to suffer. So if we can recognize such kind of a clinging, grasping happen in the mind, then it's a matter of dismantling it, abandoning it, or relinquishing it, releasing the mind, so that there is no clinging, there is no grasping. So that becomes one's path. That is a mind which is completely free from any kind of upadana, free from any grasping. So this is another theme Buddha explained. And then instigation. This is a very interesting one, subtle one. Actually, as we discuss in the volitional activities, similarly here also, one may understand, okay, I was continuing and the practice. Interestingly, I am, after abandoning one thing, I start another thing. Once it is completed, I start another thing. So likewise, it's a continuous starting, continuous initiations. I got to stop all these initiations, then only mind come to a complete standstill, complete rest. So that becomes one's theme. So that is another contemplation Buddha explains as the 10th. Then nutriments. Nutriments also another area in the Buddha's teaching. We have 4 nutriments. The typical, what we call as the edible food as the one first nutriment, then contact as the second, volitional activities, intentions as the third, and then the consciousness, that is the fourth category of nutriment. So understanding them, their operation, how we are tempted to go through that sort of nutriments, feeding ourselves and developing craving as a result of them, and because of craving actually we are going through these nutriments, absorbing these nutriments, partaking these nutriments, now abandoning to some extent and penetrating them, particularly understanding how we are sometimes driven by these nutriments, following after these nutriments, and slowly, slowly understanding them and penetrating them, and slowly minimizing their function, overwhelming function to the mind, then that is another theme that one may understand. So how to penetrate all these nutriments so that we are not driven by them. Aharanantveva asesa viraga nirodha. So we have to have a kind of a dispassion towards these nutriments. So that's another theme that Buddha explained as the 11th. Now when there is suffering in the mind, so there is an agitation, there is a little frustration, there is a little wavering vibration available in the mind. So recognizing that and then slowly tranquilizing the mind, calming down the mind, making it peaceful. So that is another theme that Buddha explained as the 12th, where a mind free from any kind of an agitation is a peaceful mind. So agitation, in general, is another way of recognizing the suffering. And then abandoning that is the path leading to the complete freedom of suffering. So that is the 12th theme that Buddha explained. Dependency. So we are tempted to depend on so many things. To our parents, to our, say, teachers, or to our children, to our friends. So many and various other infrastructure in the available in the society given by the government. So many, many things are there for us to depend on. But all that are quite vulnerable. They don't have any kind of a guarantee. And at a given moment, they can collapse, they can completely cease. So then we being the dependent, actually we could be in trouble. So how to have an independent mind, keeping the mind completely independent? So that is another theme that Buddha explained. So rather than being dependent, how to keep the mind completely independent, completely freed, not depending on anything. So that's another area Buddha explained. So if we are able to do that, then there can't be any suffering, because we are not attached to or we are not dependent on any kind of a condition phenomena. So the mind has to have a complete freedom. No way of arising any kind of a suffering, because suffering is conditioned. And suffering arises because of conditioned phenomena. Now, if the mind is capable of being not associating any kind of a conditioned phenomena, then there can't be any suffering. Then we discussed about the 14th contemplation as form and formless states. So various meditative states are there, and among them various rupa jhana, the material jhana, is something that people appreciate, rather than simply bounded by the sensual pleasures. More than that, one may even appreciate the formless jhana. So mind has complete, unbounded kind of an experience. But even more than that, Buddha explained, okay, Nirodha is the most important one. And we can say that is the complete cessation of suffering, complete cessation of craving, complete cessation of all the volitional activities. So that is the Nirodha. So not knowing Nirodha, one is continuously wandering in the long samsara. So understanding Nirodha is another theme. So one theme is that you understand some spiritual concentration, absorption as one possibility, but more than that, the next contemplation is that even more than that, you need to recognize Nirodha, cessation. So that becomes one's theme. So then if we are able to maintain our mind in the Nirodha, so then actually that is a very higher level of say contemplation. We are keeping the mind unattached, not bewildered, completely at rest, not creating any kind of a mental formations, and not creating any craving, very much like a completely contented mind. So that is another theme that Buddha explained as the 14th. And truth and falsity. So this is what we discussed last time. So actually this one and the last one, what we are going to discuss today, happiness and suffering, are fairly related. And in this actually Buddha explained how the mundane people, they may be celestial beings, they may be Brahmas, or they even be what we call human beings, or different groups of beings, actually they consider few whatever condition phenomena as the truth. But the nobles, they say they are not the truth, because they are impermanent, subject to suffering, change, and they are not under any control, so they cause suffering. So therefore it is not the truth. So the state of mind, if one is able to maintain, which is completely independent, so that is a fairly a truthful truth area that one can depend on. So same thing further Buddha explained as the 16th, but from a different point of view. Yam bhikkave sadeva kassa lokassa samara kassa sabrahma kassa sassamana brahmaniya pajaya sadeva manussaya idang sukhanti upanijjhayitam. Tang ariyanang etan dukkhanti yathabhutang sammappanyaya sudittam ayam ekanupassana. Now here Buddha mentioned, so in this whole population, which includes devas, maras, brahmas, and various ascetics, brahmins, all that different groups of humans, they regard, okay, this is happiness. All this condition, sensual stuff is kind of happiness. So this is what they decide. But the interesting thing is the noble ones have seen well with correct wisdom that this is suffering. On the other hand, what the world recognizes as suffering, the noble people understand, okay, this is not the suffering, this is actually a freedom, this is actually a happiness. So previous contemplation, actually the theme is truth and the falsity, but here happiness and suffering. So the way of looking at things, so the typical worldly approach and the noble approach, there's a huge difference. So in the typical worldly approach, they consider all these different kinds of sense impingements, maybe forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, thoughts, and all that brings us happiness, and we need to acquire them as much as possible, we need to possess them as much as possible, then only we call ourselves, we are wealthy, rich. And so that is why people are going after all this, so going after the pleasure principle. So this is the typical approach the world has taken. And they consider this as truth, and again they consider this as the happiness. But the nobles say this is not the truth and this is not the happiness. A complete contradiction is there. So last time we discussed why it is not taken as truth. Because what we have perceived is a distorted perception. So kind of an inversion has happened. Kind of a distortion has happened during our sense cognition. Through the eyes, when we are seeing a form, it is not the exact, precise or real form that we have seen. We have taken a particular perception which is fairly inverted, fairly distorted. Based on that, we start thinking, and so our thinking also distorted. Ultimately, we come to a conclusion, that conclusion also distorted, inverted. So this is the problem. So this is why, I mean, typically the worldlings, so how they put various names, various conventions, various labels, ultimately all that become permanent, staying in their mind, and that is how they start thinking, all those images, all those names, all that actually they taken for granted, and for them that is something existing, that is something existing. It is there. I can see, I can hear, I can smell, I can taste, I can sense it, cognize it. Everything is there. It is permanent. But on the other hand, when someone is through one's vipassana skills, want to thoroughly analyze it, thoroughly investigate it, then slowly, slowly one may understand, okay, all are inconstant. All are quickly changing, very transient. And this transient nature is something we have no control. What we consider as happiness is subject to this kind of a transient nature. What we consider as permanent is subject to this kind of a transient nature. So it's not going to be permanent. It's not going to provide us happiness forever. It will quickly change. It will become otherwise. So what I consider as something truth, the next moment it becomes completely different. So then how can I consider it as a truth? On the other hand, when what we consider as happiness, the next moment it becomes some sort of unhappiness, suffering. So then how can we depend on that sort of a happiness? So the conditioned phenomena in that sense give a false happiness, illusory kind of happiness. But people are going after that, so that is their main endeavor, as much as possible to satisfy the senses, gratifying the senses. As much as possible, scenes, various beautiful scenes, and satisfy eyes. As much as possible, hearing music, songs, etc., and satisfying senses. Smells are the same, tastes are the same, tangibles are the same. So these five sense chords are the main interest that people are having. We are going after that. even if we receive something, still it's not enough. We want something more. So never-ending kind of a endeavor. Even a millionaire or billionaire is still not satisfied. Even a wealthy person is not yet satisfied. Something is lacking. So this desire, this craving is quite responsible for that sort of a mentality. Even one has so many things, still not feeling happy, not feeling fulfilled, not feeling complete. So the sensual world is like this. So even though we have a car, maybe a family, maybe a good house, maybe a good occupation, maybe a good account balance, and a good reputation also maybe. Many things are there, but still feeling something lacking. Uno loko atitto tanha daso. So people become slaves to the craving. Internally there is a thirst, some unfulfilled desire. So therefore, all that what we acquire going to change. So therefore, we can't say that we may be happy forever. Only a temporary satisfaction. It can change at any given moment. Now, in the happiness and suffering, in this contemplation, Buddha explained that using many verses. So, that verses explain it thoroughly. So, let's go through them. Rupa saddha rasa gandha passa dhamma cha kevala ittha kanta manapa cha yavattiti ucchati. Form, sound, taste, odors, textures and objects of mind, all are desirable, lovely, agreeable, so long as it is said they are. So people think, okay, they are there. So they exist. They are there. There's a beautiful woman. There's a beautiful music. There's a really fantastic fragrance. So it is there. So we have that wrong perception. Okay, it is there. It is permanent. It is existing. Sadeva kasa lokasa ete vo sukha sammata. Yatta chete nirujjhanti tang nesang dukkang sammata. But when these things change, when they become otherwise, oh my goodness, I lost that. I am crying, I am worrying, I am weeping, because things have changed. Things cease to exist and they consider it as suffering. Suppose there is a beautiful song and I am enjoying that, I am maybe appreciating that. Probably next day I might get to know, okay, that singer has passed away. Or there, while I am listening to that music, okay, there is no electricity. There is a cutting off of electricity. Or someone else come and make a noise. I am being disturbed. I couldn't completely absorb to that music because someone has disturbed. Some noise has come. Or the whatever the recorder which is playing it come to some sort of fault. It's repeatedly telling the same thing. So I feel completely disgusted because I couldn't enjoy it to the fullest. Okay, you are interested in particular teledrama and you are very used to that. You enjoy that. You expect that to be telecast on a particular time, particular day. But while you are sitting, okay, immediately they say, okay, the schedule has changed. They're not going to telecast it today. It's postponed. So you feel completely unhappy. You felt that I want to see it and this is what my happiness is, this particular teledrama, what is going to happen to the characters today. So you are anxiously waiting, but all of a sudden the program, they say, okay, it's not going to telecast today. And you are somewhat enthusiastic about a particular fragrance and you want to buy it. You are searching, it is not there. It's all sold out. Oh, while you are wearing it, say on the way you come up with a kind of a little accident and maybe a garbage can fallen or someone has thrown some garbage, or you are enjoying your beautiful fragrance, but it can change. You might fall and then you have to wash the whole thing
or some maybe during a rainy day you may cut off by a vehicle, trash the muddy water. So all that can happen. But we were expecting some sort of happiness, enjoyment, satisfaction, but it is not guaranteed. So it becomes otherwise. The whatever we planned, whatever we were wearing or enjoying, it completely start the opposite. It becomes something otherwise. So at that moment we are suffering. We couldn't maintain the happiness for a long time. Unfortunately, in between somehow it become interrupted, changed, and so then we become really mentally unsatisfied, because someone assumed that someone is going to marry and expecting a kind of a very intimate relationship, very enough affection, closer to the wedding. Say someone is going to the birthday as well. During the birthday, if you are not getting a call from the opposite side, that means the from your fiancée, so then you feel really unhappy, because so you expect their call, you expect their greetings, best wishes, but they forgot you. How can it happen? So you feel completely unsatisfied, because how can there be something more important than you? You are going to marry her, going to marry him, and so I'm expecting their love, their consideration, but even during my birthday, they don't have time to wish me. So how can it happen? So you feel completely unsatisfied. So likewise, when we are thinking in a particular way, expecting some sort of a happiness from all these conditioned phenomena, unfortunately, things can go wrong. You are expecting a particular time, say you want to travel a long distance using a flight. But once you arrive at the airport, probably they may say, okay, it is delayed by 1.5 hours. It may be delayed by 3 hours. There may be something went wrong once the airplane landed and they have to go through some sort of inspection. It will take 4 hours. So what to do? You have to simply wait. So you had a lot of plans, ongoing other list of activities ahead, but everything has to be now rearranged because you have to wait at the airport for a long time. So all things can go wrong. But we consider it as complete suffering, because we expect a particular way of behavior, but it is not happening. Sukhanti dittang ariyehi sakkhayassupa rodanam pacchanikamidang hoti sabba lokena pasata. Now the nobles actually consider abandoning of personality view is very, very important. So that is the happiness. But complete opposite is what expected by the typical worldlings. Running counter to the entire world is this of those who see. So because they promote personality. They promote personality view. Okay, I'm an individual. I'm a very important person. So I have this wealth. I have this wife. I have these children. I have this husband. So this is my house. You see my reputation. And you see my occupation. So I'm a well-known person. I'm a VIP. So I'm so and so. So I'm promoting that. So that self-view is something encouraging and something appreciated, and that is what we think we have to build as much as possible, and that is what we indicate in a more important way in our CV, and we feel important. I'm a special person, I'm a respectable person, I'm an honorable person, and that is what people are expecting, to become respectful, to become honorable, to become reputed, to become admirable, to become beautiful, become someone special, so that others have kind of a center of attention. So that is what people are as much as possible trying to do. So become the fastest runner, to become the best sportsman, sportswoman. So all that becoming process is something that they encourage, and that is what we want to achieve. But the Dhamma says, the noble says, okay, you need to abandon that personality view. It's a kind of a false view. So basically, so understanding that and going against the grain is very, very difficult, because the whole world is in one direction and you are in a different direction. The whole world say, okay, you need to build up this individuality, you need to build your personality, you need to highlight yourself, you need to show your colors, you need to defeat the other person, you need to whack the fellow, you have to win the race. So that is what the world is saying. But you may understand, okay, it's a completely foolish task. I am creating a self, it's a false self. Where there is no proper self, where there is no self, I am trying to foolishly create a self. I have seen it through my wisdom. I have seen it through vipassana. So no need to have such a self. So now you are trying to go against the grain. But the world is going opposite you. They are asking you, are you crazy? Are you mad? Why are you selling all this? Why are you giving all this? Why are you giving up all this? Don't you have a future? Don't you want this, whatever, this much of wealth? So when you are trying to go against the grain, okay, the whole world coming against you. Yampare sukato ahu tadariya ahu dukkato. Yampare dukkato ahu tadariya sukato vidu. So the complete opposite perceptions are there. So the world says, okay, having all this wealth, saying all that is mine, it belongs to me, having so many different, say, titles, being an important, very recognized person. So that is what we need. That is what the happiness. So the world says like that, but the noble say the opposite. Okay, I have to abandon things, I have to let go of things, keep the mind relaxed, unburdened, not attached with anything, not possessing anything. The mind has to be empty. So it's the complete opposite. So what the nobles say, what the Aryas say as empty and all that, so for the worldly being, so it is utter nonsense. So they consider it's going crazy. Passa dhammang durajanam sampamulhas viddasu nyutanam tamohoti andakaro apassatam. What others speak of as happiness, that the noble ones speak of as suffering. What others speak of as suffering, that the noble ones have known as happiness. Behold this dhamma, hard to comprehend. Here the foolish are bewildered. There is gloom for those who are blocked, darkness for those who do not see. Satancha vivatang hoti aloko pasatam iva santikena vijanati vijananti maga dhammas akovido. So Buddha mentioned, for the one who can't see, so it's everything is like blocked, thing like bewildered. But for the ones that you can, who can see, it's very much like the darkness as dispelled when the light is on. And at that moment, everything is clear. So you are very much like, everything is very, very clear. Because you can see things, because the light is switched, is on, the light is there, illumination is there. But unfortunately, the others, even though Nibbana is so close, they can't see it. Santike na vijananti magga dhammasa akovida. Even though it is so close, the brutes, unskilled in dhamma, do not understand it even when it is close. Satancha vivatang hoti aloko pasatamiva. But the people who can see, who have eyes, they easily can see the reality. බවරාග පරිතේහි බවසෝතානු සාරිභි මාර දෙහියානු පන්නේහි නායං ධම්මෝ සුසම්බුදු. This Dhamma is not easily understood by those afflicted by lust for existence, by those flowing in the stream of existence, deeply mired in Mara's realm. Konu anyatra ariyehi padang sambuddha marahati yam padang sammadanyaya parinibbanti anasavati. Who else apart from the noble ones are able to understand this state? When they have correctly known that state, those without influxes attain Nibbana. So these are very powerful verses that Buddha included in the last section of this sutta. And Katukrunde Nyananda Thero in his book Magic of the Mind, so all these verses, he put them in a little poetic way. Let us go through that. Very beautifully he has presented the same thing in a little more poetic way. Sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, ideas, all that what they deem desirable, charming, pleasing things, of which they claim it is, that means it is existing, as far as their claim extends, as far as their claim extends. The world with its gods is agreed that these are pleasant things, and wherein they surcease, that is unpleasant indeed, say they. As bliss, the noble ones have seen the curb on selfhood bias. Behold, in contrast is their vision with that of the entire world. So there's a complete contradiction. But others spoke of in terms of bliss, that as woe the saints declared. But others spoke of in terms of woe, that as bliss the saints have known. Behold, a norm so hard to grasp. Baffled herein are ignorant ones. Murk it is to those enveloped, as darkness unto the undiscerning. But to the good wide open it is, as light is unto those discerning. So near, and yet they know not. Fools, unskilled in the norm. Now, so we can see a huge difference between nobles and their vision, and the completely ignorant peoples and their vision. So complete difference is there. So the nobles say something is happy, and the ignorant say it is complete unhappiness. And nobles say something suffering, and for the ignorant, so that is the happiness. So there's a huge difference. So therefore it is quite understood that how people may oppose what you are doing, how people may oppose your way of life, because you are trying to be more frugal, you want to be somewhat secluded, sometimes maintain a mind quite tranquil without going for any sensual gratification, without participating into parties, not going into various kind of carnivals. Rather, you are enjoying your solitude, not going after various sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles. And interestingly, you are even trying to keep your mind still, not even thinking. So the others actually can't even imagine it. How are you going to keep your mind completely still without a thought? So what is the happiness? So they may ask. But for them, actually more they have, the more sights they can see, more films, Netflix they can see, or more music that they can enjoy, more beautiful smells that they can sense, the luxurious hotels from which they can partake their food, the most beautiful partner that they can be with. So that becomes their ultimate. So that is the happiness. But the opposite is there for the renunciant, the yogi, the practitioner. So they understand their futile nature, impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, never-ending nature. So they go for a different path. So they want to be secluded, they want to meditate, not going to get disturbed, not participating into the these kind of parties, rallying, etc. And they become fairly calm, relaxed, tranquil. Mind become peaceful. And here there may be even situations where there are no thoughts. One can recognize the inner silence. So being in the inner silence. So they start being in the inner silence. There is no any sensual pleasures. There is no any particular pleasurable feeling as such, but they are internally satisfied, contented, like what they have everything now. So mind become completely satisfied. So different kind of way that the nobles have taken, but the opposite is given in the typical mundane world. So when this whole verse is uttered by the Buddha, it is mentioned that 60 bhikkhus were completely liberated by hearing this sutta. And as you can remember, this sutta also preached by the Buddha while he was in the Migaramatupasada, in the where what the lady Vishakha has built. And at the same place, actually, Anapanasati Sutta also Buddha has preached. And here we can see a very interesting way that Buddha presented the whole Vipassana path. And of course, as we emphasize, this is not for a beginner. But when one is continuing one's Vipassana path, at a particular juncture, at a particular moment, they may recognize one of these or many of these. Okay, this is what I have to do. And maybe later, another day, you can recognize, okay, this is also true. Okay, I can do in this path as well. So you may start recognizing many different paths. And all are actually merging. All are helping each other. Now, of course, you can see, for example, if you say abandoning craving as the cause, or abandoning clinging as the cause. So very, very similar on the other hand. They have interrelationship. Craving causes clinging. Tanha, paccha, upadana. So they have relationships. On the other hand, contact, feeling. So this is another area. Contact causes feelings. So either you are abandoning feelings or either you are abandoning contact. So they have a certain relationship. On the other hand, volitional activities also are conditioned. They also caused by the contact. So there are relationships. And this instigation and volitional activities are somewhat similar. So there are some subtle differences. In the volitional activities, you are broadly examining the bodily activities, verbal activities, mental activities, and calming down all that. So you are in utter peace. You are sitting cross-legged or maybe very quiet. And mind, the there is no speech. The verbal activities also have completely calmed. And now it's a matter of calming down the mental activity. So you come to a kind of a complete standstill. And on the other hand, instigation. So you, rather than being driven by various activities, various jobs, tasks, responsibilities, so you find a kind of a rest, allowing the mind to have a rest, viveka nisitang, and you appreciate that relaxation, maintain that, so that you are enjoying that relaxation. On the other hand, independency, anisita. So maintaining anisita state, completely independent state of mind. So that and the upadana go hand in hand. So if you are completely freed, not dependent, you are completely independent, that means you are not clinging as well, not grasping as well. So that is what Buddha highlighted in the Satipatthana Sutta. Anisitocha viharati nachakinchi loki upadhyati. So you are maintaining a mind completely free, completely independent. So that is possible only when the mind is not grasping anything in the world. So they are interrelated. And the Four Noble Truths, of course, is another theme where you recognize, okay, the suffering and the cause of suffering, and you are developing Noble Eightfold Path so that you are able to maintain the freedom of suffering, complete cessation of suffering. So likewise, there are very interesting relationships in this sutta, and again fairly of important sutta for the Vipassana yogis, and it's quite inspiring. And with that note, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session, and with that actually we can conclude the whole series based on the Dvaitanupassana sutta.
Thank you, Sante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If anyone has any questions, feel free to raise your hand or send them via the chat. And then earlier today, a little bit before the talk, I had sent out an email with the retreat schedule. So you can find the information in your email. If you didn't receive it, just send me a message and I'll be sure to forward it to you. I'd like to invite Joseph for the first question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante.
Yep.
Well, thank you. This has been an amazing journey. It's been 4 months, I realized, that we've been working with this sutta, 16 weeks.
Good.
And, I mean, that's quite intense.
Yes, yes.
That we've been on this theme for, I mean, 4 months, that's a fair amount of time.
Yeah.
And I just maybe some things, some small things I kind of noticed. For sure, I find it very helpful to hear the Dhamma, because if I'm doing this practice and I do feel definitely more outcast, I definitely feel going against the grain.
Right.
And then I feel lonely or alone. You know, I wonder, am I going crazy? Just like you mentioned there, am I losing my mind? Is this correct? Because
right.
Even, you know, I mean, I participate in these sort of Western mindfulness groups as well as part of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely they're not talking about this at all.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then even in those groups, I feel like I'm an extremist of some kind, you know, and so when I hear the Dhamma, especially the weeks go on like this, it's very healthy. It's very good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very important, I think, to hear it.
Correct.
To say, yes, actually, I'm not, like, this is true. I can see it's true.
Correct.
And one of the things I noticed even today, for example, I came across the situation with a loved one where there's just like a lot of pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it was just available. A lot of pain and suffering was available out of nowhere, kind of unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that there was a kind of a capacity, a sort of a space to hold that. And it seemed very clear to me that that capacity or that space had been developed through the mindfulness practice. And then I saw a great benefit that I was able to sort of endure and do what needed to be done in a way that was wholesome and helpful, wasn't causing me like tension, and that I could see the other person didn't have that capacity. And it was really in this moment of suffering where all of the, like, what was really important or what was really valuable became very evident.
Mm-hmm.
Where, say, in more, you know, day-to-day activities where there isn't so much suffering, where everybody's having a good time and everything's fairly pleasant, difficult to see the benefit. It didn't, you know, that's where I had the doubts or the questions.
But mm-hmm.
As soon as the suffering was really on the table, it was pretty clear that it was all of that understanding and practice that was now, like the value, it was just obvious.
Mm-hmm.
There didn't need to be I mean, that's all I can say. It was just really, it was kind of like a moment where I could see, oh, yes, this isn't just a theoretical
right.
Understanding. This is like a deep change, transformation that's happening.
Exactly.
And that, mm-hmm. that transformation can't be done when the suffering comes. Mm-hmm. Like when the suffering comes, whatever capacity one has, that is the capacity one has. We can't say, okay, now I'm suffering, now I better go and do some mindfulness practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, you know, we're kind of, I guess, we're practicing for those moments. And then I could also see, this is just one example of suffering. There's much more to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable with age, getting older.
Right.
It's inevitable. There is much more to come, even mm-hmm. though I can't see it.
Correct.
So that was. I just wanted to say thank you mm-hmm. For delivering the talks, and that was just a kind of a
yeah.
small example of how I could see that.
Good. Yeah, that's very true. I totally agree with you. So basically, as Buddha very beautifully pointed out in the last two contemplations, so we can see the difference between a practitioner and the typical ignorant worldly person. So the ignorant worldly person know only the sensual desires. They know only the sensual pleasures, because we being in the sensual world, and that is what the prominence was given: beautiful sights, beautiful sounds, beautiful smells, tastes, tangibles. And so that is the fair emphasis given. And actually, we are using our education to satisfy our senses. We are using our whatever the skills to satisfy the senses. And we may have various other responsibilities. And they are also we are using to uplift a kind of a personality. So through our responsibilities, through our occupation, through our whatever acquisitions, all that we are using to develop a personality. So that is also another way of satisfying ourselves. So feeling like I'm an important person. So that gives you a lot of morale. That gives you a lot of conceit. So that is why so people are acquiring wealth, and not only wealth, now they are going for power. They are going for various titles, various reputations, because they feel quite uplifted when others are respecting, when others are bowing, or when others are being afraid of you. And when the boss is coming, okay, the subordinates feel kind of somewhat fearful, because the boss might fire you. So you have kind of a respect, you have kind of a bias, and you have a little bit of afraid, a fear towards the CEO, whoever. So you like to become a CEO so that you can sort of show your presence. So all that actually is what the typical world is appreciating. But when one is into the practice, so he founds a complete difference, complete opposite. Now, with respect to the five sense chords, as we already discussed, okay, the sight, sound, smells, taste, tangibles, now they understand, okay, they are quite vulnerable, they are going to change, so no point of going after that too much. Let me simply somewhat come back to myself, be with myself, let's start the inner journey. And not only that, so he understand, okay, no point of developing, by defeating others and suppressing others and trying to develop a self, trying to develop a personality view, trying to highlight oneself. So all that also become completely unnecessary. And where we are trying to build a self, where there is no self. Anattani attamaning pasalokan sadevaka. Nivittang namarupasming idang satchanti manyati. So we are telling, okay, this is the truth, once the consciousness is going through some sort of an image, some sort of an amarupa, some sort of a name and form, like you get a stain in your spectacle. So when there is stain in your spectacle, if you attribute it to something outside, telling, okay, there is a mountain, there is a rock outside, so that's a complete illusion, kind of a delusion. But the moment that you understand, okay, the problem is in the spectacles, I have to clean my glasses, then you can't see the a particular object outside, you can see through the whole thing. So the mind has complete clarity. So likewise, it's a very, very interesting eye-opening path that Buddha is showing us. So the more one is in that path, so then slowly, slowly, he still can navigate through the typical conventional things. So actually, we don't need to take a kind of a stand telling, okay, now I have to renunciate, I have to come to the forest, I can't be with the world now. We should not go to that kind of extreme either. So while being in the world, can we go against the grain? So that's a challenge. So say for example,
that is a challenge.
So while others are trying to tempt you, while others are trying to, you know, kind of seduce you, and all that may be possible, may be available, but how you are navigating, how you are, you know, safeguarding yourself, coming back to the practice, and they may try to sort of belittle you or joke you. But you know what you are doing is the correct thing. You have that confidence. You are quite confident about what you are doing. And there is no assurance or kind of approval needed from another, you know, typical worldly person, because you are now quite confident, okay, this is the correct thing I am doing. I am quite confident of it, and I know it is the truth. So even though they criticize me, I'm not going to stop it, because I am quite convinced, okay, this is the path. So that confidence is something that we really, really need. So that is why these kind of suttas, these kind of Buddha's teachings are very, very important, because otherwise sometimes when people are trying to convince us, they are forceful to us and they are pouring all that they are, you know, the worldly ideas, we also might little trembled, and we also might start wavering ourselves, because their influence is so significant sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the tricky part.
Exactly.
Is being around the society.
Yeah.
It's constant. It's like you say. It's constant. It's another thing I've been doing. I've been reading the Seven Contemplations of Insight by Venerable Jnana Rama.
Right.
And I was kind of doing that at the same time as we were doing this talk.
Good.
And so it seemed to me, I think this kind of came from the discussion we had had, where you had said that the Western mindfulness tends to focus more on the foundation, the Satipatthana, and not really go into the Vipassana aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to understand a little bit more about that aspect, the Vipassana aspect, which isn't really gone into in the West.
Right.
And it seemed to me that it was this really the understanding of non-self and the suffering. Those seem to be the two things that never really get mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things are coming and going. You can observe your thoughts coming and going. There seems to be some attention to that. But the non-self aspect, I found that was the thing that I needed a little bit more to spend attention on. So I was reading in Venerable Jnana Rama's Seven Contemplations. It's the third contemplation that he talks about.
Right.
So in my practice, I was able to notice how sounds that were coming, or the sensations in the body, or the thoughts were all coming of their own accord. Like they were just coming. There was no self that was making them come. They were simply coming and going, and that to me seemed fairly clear that was an ungovernable or ungoverned non-self.
Mm-hmm.
Aspect.
Correct.
And then I was listening to another talk by a Thai forest monk, translated into English, and he was talking about the Vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
And saying how it was important to distinguish between the consciousness and the name and form. Mm-hmm. So to not only see the thought, but to understand that that thought is being known. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of kind of moved by that, and I started to notice, and in my practice the past week or so, where a sound comes, I notice the sound, but then I also notice that the sound is known, mm-hmm. and that knowing of the sound, which I'm labeling as the vijnana, mm-hmm. I'm assuming that that's the consciousness, and I can see is also a non-self, and that it's just happening automatically.
Exactly.
Like the sound comes, the vijnana appears.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed, at least in the beginning here, there was a kind of like a barrage of sensations, sound, sensation, thought, and then with each accompanying one, this awareness of the knowing aspect, and it seemed to be just a constant stream
mm-hmm.
of these, and I found that a little I wasn't sure if I was making too much of an effort. It seemed a little say previous to that I was in more of just a tranquil state, more of a real sort of calm state, and since I've been practicing with this sort of looking at the vijnana, it seemed to be more active state, seemed to be more going on, and I tried to sort of just relax and allow it to have happen a little bit more automatically, and that seemed to help, to go well, and I'm just wondering if you would advise on that kind of practice and moving forward, please.
Yeah. Actually, this is it's a known, rather we can say what we call as jñātañca jñānañca ubhopi vipassati. Sometimes we call it as paṭavipassana, where so you know the object, and you know that knowing mind, and you know that both are transient. So the object also transient, and the knowing mind, also, that is also transient. So, I mean, there is no self that knowing the object. But the knowing mind also is a transient thing. So, as you correctly mentioned, the object is there, the consciousness is what it is, being aware of it. That awareness also immediately arising and immediately passing away. So, it is not only the object, even the subject is impersonal, or we can say non-self. So, sometimes people might think, okay, there is something seen. Okay, it is transient, it is impermanent. But who is seeing it? The seer. Seer may be permanent. Similarly, there are sounds. Good. So they may be transient. But who is the one listening? This listener? Okay, listener may be permanent. Okay, there are smells, tastes, tangibles. Good, that they are transient. But who is this? The sensor. So this sensor may be permanent. And similarly, there are thoughts and various mental states, mental objects, and they may be transient, but who is the knower? The knower is the self. Okay, knower is permanent. So this is what the typical, you know, Hinduism and various other religions are talking. But beautifully in the Kalakarama Sutta, Buddha beautifully mentioned the knower also is impermanent, knower also transient, knower also non-self. The taster or the cognizer, all that is impermanent, and that is true, is non-self. The seer, listener, all that is impermanent, transient, non-self. Then he is the only teacher actually who has come to that depth. There is no thinker, even though there is thoughts. There are thoughts. Thoughts without a thinker.
that's really, it's super profound.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is like a whole other level.
Yes.
To go there is really, the heart of the Buddha's teaching that I see is, like you say, super unique. And
yeah.
No one else is mentioning that.
Exactly.
And I can't say that I have fully seen it, but I can intellectually at least understand
exactly.
That these knowing minds are discrete comings and goings, and that together they're creating this sense of a knowing mind, like a solid knowing mind.
Exactly.
Like I can't say that I understand that.
Yes. Yes. Fully agree.
You know, but I can sort of start to see how it's as if you know, like on a music, the metaphor I thought of was like a sound studio where they put. They mix all the different instruments together so that it sounds like there's a whole band playing, but it's actually a whole bunch of different tracks that are put together. It kind of struck me something like that. Like there's all of these sort of momentary knowing moments which are there, and together they create a sense that there's this big knowingness which is there, but. Anyway, that's kind of my
So that's kind of thanks for sharing. Yeah, thanks for sharing, Joseph. Actually, as you correctly mentioned, all that instantaneous knowing moments gives us the false perception that I am there. I am the one who is listening. I am the one who is hearing, etc. But what actually happening is theoretically we can understand, okay, when there is a sound, that knowing consciousness immediately arising and passing away. So the next moment also it's arising and passing away. Next moment also arising and passing away. Because of its rapidity, we get the wrong perception, okay, it is existing. I am listening. So listening is continuous.
Yes.
Listening is continuous, so the listener is also there. So I'm attributing that listening activity to a person, and I'm calling it as myself. So the more we thoroughly
That's
understand
right.
the Dhamma and carefully observe more and more how this transience happen, how this impersonal experience is going on, then slowly I feel that we stop creating a self out of this process. Currently we may be doing it to some extent, and even that slowly we can penetrate and abandon, so that one day that whole false perception may completely disappear.
Thank you, Bhante.
Tervan Saranai.
Thank you, Bhante, and thank you, Joseph, for asking and sharing. I'd like to invite Kumudini for the next question.
It was Arunai Bhante. I want to let you know that I told you once before that I would be coming to Sri Lanka and would want to attend a retreat of yours. But I am now unable to come. The doctor has told me not to fly.
I see.
And so I wanted to let you know that. But also what I wanted to mostly let you know was is that because of my practice, I am taking this sickness of mine in so calmly. I am myself surprised. So I wanted to let you know how this practice has helped me.
Kind of sickness, if you like to share?
Well, I have very high blood pressures, about 200, over 200, and then all of a sudden it goes very low, and I collapse.
I see.
So with that, they tell me not to fly. So that is why I can't come.
Right.
And Bhante, so I am sort of, I am amazed even at myself how well I'm taking this. It's like this is Buddha's teaching coming,
right.
You know, full force at me.
Right.
So I'm really, you know, taking that. But I also have another question, Bhante. As I told you, I have been following I've been studying. I wanted to ask you about the eight persons mentioned in the sutra of what is that sutra called? Ratana Sutra. In that it talks about eight persons, but according to the Abhidhamma, it does not, you can't say there are eight persons, because they say the moment you have magga, mm-hmm. the pala happens soon
immediately.
After.
Mm.
So what are they? How are the eight persons coming there?
Yeah, those are that is why I mean the sutta understanding is very practical. So I mean the sutta understanding is more practical, and according to the suttas, so magga is one. I mean magga is there, and the one that who is practicing. The path is one thing. A person for the time being, for the clarification, and then after some time only he may achieve the realization. So the fruit, that is the pala. Mm-hmm. So therefore, in the practical sense,
but the
only thing is that someone can analyze. Okay, you are coming on a particular path. So you were in the path, and now once you achieve the realization, now you are in the fruit, now you are in the pala. So that previous moment you were in the path, okay, now you are in the fruit path. Or now you are in the fruit, now you are in the result. So it's in the last moment, it's kind of a momentary. One can analyze like that. Now say for example, now assume that someone is running on a marathon. So while he is running and he's getting closer to the finish line, but he's still running. But assume that he is now just 1 inch away from the finish line. And next moment that he's finished, he's completely won the race, or he has completed the race. The next moment he completed the race. So then we can say, okay, the previous moment, you are in the path. Next moment, you are in the finished. You are in the result. But of course, we can practically understand he has ran a marathon. He has gone through a long distance, recognizing all that, practicing all these necessary qualities, skills. Then only he has arrived the result. So therefore, the sutta understanding is more practical, where you give a fair emphasis on the practice, and you develop certain qualities, you develop certain skills, slowly, slowly that helps to achieve the result, achieve the goal. And there are instances that Buddha explained, say for example, using various similes. Say for example, there is a hen, a cock, that maturing the eggs. There may be a proper term for that, I can't remember.
Hatching
the eggs.
Hatching the eggs.
Yeah, yes. Hatching eggs. Yes. But there may be times that she might think, okay, why still didn't my, chickens didn't come out?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Okay.
Because still not enough hatching has happened. But when she is continuing to hatch, ultimately, on one day, they may immediately come out because enough hatching was done. It was completed. So likewise, when we are continuing our path, so we are daily developing little bit of our parami or little bit of our skills, our, whatever the qualities. And one day it will come to a fruition. Okay, now you get the result. Now you get the realization. So the realization is very much like instantaneous, but for that to happen, you have to come a long path. You have to come daily practice. So daily practice is the one giving you that strength, giving you that, the necessary qualifications, skills. Ultimately, you achieve the goal.
I see. Your explanation sounds more plausible than the Abhidhamma. Abhidhamma says one thought moment is pala, the next one immediately following is the fruit.
Mm-hmm. Magga and pala.
More logical to me.
Yeah. So
yes.
So this is the difference. So sometimes we are trying to be too analytical and trying to give a kind of an expression, kind of a formula. But from the practical point of view, I feel suttas are very close to our heart and encourages the practice and being more practical, and then developing ourselves, and just more connected to ourselves, we can relate with those teachings more easily.
Thank you, Bhante. Teruvan Saranai. Much merit to you.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.
Okay, thank you. And taking the questions in order, there's a written question here. Namo Buddhaya, Avasari Bhante, may Venerable Bhante please advise, what should we do in the middle of crowd when it is unavoidable? Shall we do mindfulness of the situation, or shall we do certain vipassana? Bahoma pin Bhante, Thiruvan Sanai.
Yeah. So both are all right. I mean, it depends on where you are, where your practice is. So if you recognize, okay, you can simply practice mindfulness, yes, you can, you can do that. But more than that, assume that you can practice vipassana, in the sense that you assume that you are developing vipassana for a long time, and say you are able to recognize the impermanence of internal phenomena, probably while being in the crowd. Say, how about looking at the mind? So what are the thoughts arising, and any kind of anger arising, any kind of frustration arising, any kind of impatience happening. So all that you can recognize in the mind, what is going on in the mind. In that sense, we can simply say a part of vipassana. So mindfulness is also the same thing. You can go to the cittanupassana. On the other hand, suppose that you are a practitioner who can achieve some sort of independence in your mind. Non-grasping of your mind, non-grasping, and so you are able to establish yourself there. So it may be a challenging situation for you now, while amidst the crowd, while being in the crowd, can you maintain that non-grasping state? So there you have another interesting challenge to your vipassana practice. So likewise, where we are in the path, so depending on that, we can approach the opportunity. So if you are simply a beginner of mindfulness, no problem, you can simply be mindful. Okay, I am in the crowd, I am standing, I am sitting. Okay, I have these kind of sensations. So you are trying to ground yourself, not completely going to be distracted by the noise or by the various inputs coming from the crowd. So then you can completely become unmindful. Rather, you are simply trying to establish mindfulness, so that is one situation, one possibility. But on the other hand, as just I have explained, as we are continuing the vipassana, so depending on where we are, we can try to apply the scenario to our practice.
Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Rupika for the next question. Rupika, you may unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thiruvan Saranai, Swami Mahansan.
Yeah.
First of all, we are looking forward to your coming to Perth in May. That's wonderful news we received. Also, Bhante, a very heartful gratitude for this sutta explanation. It has been wonderful to listen to it because actually just to, it's so joyful that I felt that I need to share because every session I felt I wanted to share, but since this is the last one, because I have been practicing vipassana for 14 years and doing cittanupassana. How I came about is I had started the Chaturarya Satya or the Four Noble Truths. I summarized on a piece of paper because we were going to on a pilgrimage. But looking at the First Noble Truth, I realized I have seen all the dukkha. And the last one, when it came to the last one, Panchupadana Skanda Dukkha, this is 10 years ago, I was wondering, oh my God, what is exactly this the five khandhas. So that turned me into actually practicing vipassana. And since then, I have been looking at my mind internally. Every mind, every thought I could see at some point. And this has been really wonderful because I can relate to most of the steps. They are all merging with each other. But my first, after looking at my internally, my thoughts all the time, after the first 7 years, what happened was sanskara samatho, bante, all the sanskaras one day, just one after the other, they were coming up, and they disappeared one after the other, and it was a beautiful experience I had. Since then, I have also told you at the same session that about a year ago that I had, and I have been practicing ever since, I did the Nama Rupa. Looking through the Nama Rupa, I found out that everything at the end of the day, it is chittena niyate, chittena niyate loke bante, sanskarne karala, or mind made. So therefore, at that point in time, perhaps because I was practicing it so much, I could say. And then I, one day I was, when I was not actually even meditating, I was just outdoors, I saw this, that there was nothing outside or nothing inside because I was at a park. I could see everything. I was seated on a bench, but I saw everything, but it didn't register in my mind. That means I didn't take any object. I saw the object. I can't explain the experience beyond expression, beyond words to explain. So that moment when I got up from my meditation, or got up, I was not meditating, but from that moment, what came to my mind was that there's nothing outside or nothing inside. It's all a thought that is created by myself. So after that, however much, before that incident, however much I said no thoughts or there's no self, I forgot about it. But now it is like I can't forget about it. It is very certain now. I have all the confidence in this Dhamma. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. Yeah, you saw the non-self happening. Yeah, it's so beautiful that you realize that actually there's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's empty.
Correct.
And now I can in my practice. I'm not a person who practices daily, but now I want to sit most of the time because previously it was moment to moment, looking at the mind, going inward. And, you know, it's a thought, what type of a thought, you know, I can explain step by step the process I went through, but I don't want to explain 14 years of practice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that beauty of, you know, having that confidence that you're going on the path. Of course, thanks to the teaching of many great monks, yourself, Dhammajivahandro, Venerable Therika, who has been, you know, guiding me along has been very good. Of course, I must also say recently, not very long ago, maybe about 12 months ago, and I discussed this with you as well. One day I had a very incident that all the thoughts were coming, like a bottle of soda, or all the past. But at that moment, I was fully aware that there were kind of me looking at myself. Rupika is doing the talking, but I was away from myself, but I let all those thoughts that was deep down me get out of myself because I felt the need to clear my past karma, maybe for the whole so many samsaric lives that I might have had all this inside me. That's the thought that I got. And I got all that clearing happening. This happened after I had that beautiful experience at the park. And now I feel very, very light in my body,
mm-hmm.
and very joyful,
mm-hmm.
because I can sit, any time I can sit, and I'm looking, where's my thoughts, where's sankhara?
Mm-hmm.
No sankhara is happening. Of course, day-to-day things comes up, and then of course thoughts come up, and still I'm trying to, now I know what I have to do, and where I have to do more work. And it's not more work, it's just habitual process.
Correct.
Have to change to this new process.
Mm.
It's that transition that I think I have to go through, because I can see, one time I could see, this is the manovijnana, this is the gandha or the sound or whatever it is, and I can see, but now I can go for a long time, when I say long time, 10-20 minutes, and I'm like waiting for sankhara to happen, but even something happens, I can disregard, there's nothing, there's absolutely nothing, it's empty, it's just the mind trying to trick me into a self, and understanding there's no self, actually most of these things about upadhi, vedana, upadana, agitation, all these come to, you know, it just falls into the place.
Mm.
So I just wanted to share that this teaching. Thank you so much. My heartfelt gratitude. Because of this sutra, it gave me really confidence that I'm really, the practice has putting that effort of 14 years of looking at myself within me, not outside, my walls, it has actually brought me to a very beautiful place. Very happy about it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts and your experience. So that is the really encouraging thing, because sometimes when we start our practice, we can't find a direction. Where am I going to move forward? Because people are talking this, people are talking that. So, but still I am just a beginner. I don't know what to do. Still, I can't. Things are very much like clear to me. So like that, I mean, the one may have a lot of doubts, wavery things and shadowy path. But later, slowly, as you correctly mentioned, so slowly we start getting confidence, our practice becomes somewhat thorough and not wavering now, we become fairly confident about our practice. And then as you said, when the kind of a breakthrough happens, so that also sometimes we are not sure about it. Okay, what has happened there? I mean, am I in the correct path? So did I miss something or am I going crazy? So likewise, this kind of doubts are also possible. So when we hear a sutta like this, so all that doubt can be eliminated and you are so confident. And so that is why the Buddha's teaching is so important, because sometimes certain people, not knowing the depth of the Dhamma or not really practicing, they think of something, they imagine of something, or they hear a particular sermon or a particular teaching from someone, and they immediately try to conclusions, and then they are trying to convince others, trying to attack others, and all these things are there. A correct practitioner, a true practitioner, therefore has to be fairly equipped with the deep teachings of the Buddha. Then he is so confident, because not only that, his or her own experience is so powerful, more than that, now he has the thorough affirmation, certification given by the Buddha's teaching. Okay, in this particular sutta, Buddha mentioned like this. So, okay, I am experiencing this right now. So, I have no doubt about it. So, Buddha has affirmed that. Buddha has given the certification. It is not that I am trying to, say, show off myself, or you are trying to, look down on another person. But you internally, you understand, okay, even though he is telling like this, I have no doubt about it. I'm quite confident about my practice. This is what I need to do. On this particular sutta, Buddha has mentioned like this. I'm entirely experiencing the same thing what Buddha is explaining. I'm quite confident about it. So therefore, in certain suttas, Buddha mentioned this sutta me jnana as a kind of a weapon. Because you know, sometimes people are only known to Dhamma for limited, through their limited experience, and they come to various conclusions and immediately trying to generalize it. Immediately trying to generalize it, and they are telling it to everyone. But and we have to have a, you know, a kind of a long-term experience as well as a thorough understanding about the teachings of the Buddha. Then only we can confidently say, okay, this is exactly going to happen, and in these particular suttas, this is mentioned. So likewise, that is a kind of a weapon that we can avoid any kind of a confusion or perplexity is going to happen in our mind. So therefore, the teachings is utterly important, extremely important, particularly the suttas are extremely important, so that we develop the confidence. They start, you know, addressing us. They start eliminating the doubts, giving us a lot of confidence. So then our confidence become more and more, you know, thoroughly established.
Yes, thank you so much, Bhante. That's very true.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when you're practicing, it's quite hard, because even though there were so many difficult times, because I never gave up, because when I started doing this 10 years ago, I knew when I, as soon as I put the Four Noble Truths down on a piece of paper, that this was the blueprint that I had to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And first Dukkha Samudaya is the starting point. And when I went through that, I knew all the dukkhas I have encountered. And I was confident. But when it came to the Panchapadana Skandha Dukkha, I really at that time didn't know exactly what Buddha meant.
Mm.
So that is why I thought, okay, I had to do Chittanupassana, and went on, and I could see how I made the story, then the habits, how to cut the story off. When you think that you are okay, something pops up, and then you make sankhara, but little by little, gradually, you know, this is sankhara. You don't need to go there anymore.
Mm.
And like that, and sometimes the thoughts are coming, and every single thought can be seen by them. I can see every thought. That drives you really, really mad as well. But when you see each thought, only you can identify, okay, this is the pattern I'm doing.
Mm.
This is where I'm going wrong. This is my mamatvaya is coming up.
Correct.
This is my something else is coming up.
Mm.
And you can see the pattern. And even if you try not to, and I thought, oh, I know this, okay, I shouldn't be going there. But until I saw non-self or that point in time, sometimes I forget, because it's very difficult, Bhante, when you're in a very lay life, you're pulled by so many things socially. I mean, I have a very strong character in the sense, because this is my path. Therefore, I can, so whatever my family or my friends or whatever, who's ever said, I don't mind, because I know this is my path and this is what I want to do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I had that confidence in Buddha as well. Buddha said, if you want to go through this path, this is the recipe.
Mm.
You have to go through and find out for yourself.
Mm.
But the beauty is, there are so many sutras explaining, so many different angles.
Exactly.
When you start something, then you can see the upadana. Now I know where. So at different points, this sutra is so beautiful. It just lays out everything that I have gone through in my path, I have encountered.
Mm-hmm.
Even this instigation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting a project. Just as soon as I finish a project, I'm starting another project. It's all good projects, but I'm starting. Then when I found out that, I thought, no, I'm not going to do any projects. Vivekanisthitam. Then I should not be starting any projects, good or bad.
Yeah.
So when I saw this, I was like, yeah, wow. I stopped it on time, and Buddha has mentioned it. So it's really very joyful, Bhante.
Yeah,
Thank you so much for your beautiful teachings. I've been following this sutta in English and Sinhalese as always, but it has been absolutely joyful. And Thank you so much again. And sorry for taking the time, but I just had to share my experience because of the joy for other people to know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you so much.
Tereon Sanai.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Geshan.
Tereon Sanai Pante, I hope you can hear me.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. So I really like the conversations and the questions that was raised. You know, the very last point that was made as well, the with the Viveka Nisitang, you know, like I recently, after I came to Sri Lanka, and I saw certain changes. I came after a long time to Sri Lanka, and I saw certain changes, and I saw certain individuals, parents, that they are struggling to with their kids and etc. So when I got here, you know, I thought that I was kind of a person who tried to, didn't want to do a lot of projects. I was in Viveka Nisitang sort of a environment per se. And then when I came, I think I got hooked. And my sister basically asked me to sort of start up a project. The project was to collect money, get a certain type of individuals, collect and help on some of the students. They can get their books. So it wasn't a matter for me to just write a check, but the noble way to sort of do it is encourage others, talk about the process. So this process took about a couple of months as well while I was listening to this, and then when this lady was talking about it, and I was thinking how much we want to do certain things for the individuals, and then we get dragged in here as well with a lot of work. So thanks for sharing those. Pante, I have a couple of questions, and those questions were pertaining to the Sutta teaching as well. And I think I have asked this question earlier. So these type of teaching is for a person who has sort of gone through certain type of a practice, not just a beginner. And I see that because I see some of those changes as well, but I really haven't gone into all 16 aspects. I have only sort of see maybe several of the aspect of the feelings, maybe the contact, consciousness, and so on and so forth. So my question for you is, I don't have to practice all these 16 methods, maybe one or two methods. If I practice it well enough, is that adequate?
Exactly. Yeah, very true. So the Buddha through his omniscient knowledge, so he being his broader knowledge, so he's explaining everything as much as possible. So therefore, I mean, it doesn't mean that we need to pay attention to all these 16 and we need to endeavor ourselves to practice all 16. But as we move forward, we come across one or few of them. So then we are quite confident, yes, in this particular sutta, this particular approach Buddha has mentioned. Now I am confident. I don't need to waver on that. So I am practicing that. So Buddha has assured, okay, if you are continuing that, so your success is guaranteed. In this sutta it is mentioned. So like that, you are, so for our affirmation, for our confidence, we can use this. So as you correctly mentioned, it doesn't mean that we have to practice all the 16. But there is a kind of a merging, by the way. Now, as we already discussed, so when you are practicing Four Noble Truths, yes, you are reducing all the mental formations, you are reducing all the initiations, you are reducing the craving, you are reducing the clinging. So there's a huge, huge amount of merging happen, by the way. So the way we look at it is the different. The perspectives are different, but ultimate, what is the change happening in the mind is quite the similar, same.
Right, and so ultimately, what I have realized with this teaching, and so thank you. I had to give so much of merits for you and Venerable Dhammajiva, of course, to sort of get me into this place through your guidance. And I was born Buddhist. On my birth certificate says Buddha Hagamata, you know, but I never knew what is Buddhism. For a while, I was sort of searching for it, and maybe several years ago, when my brothers also sort of introduced your teaching and Venerable Dhammajiva's teaching, that was the sort of lightning, and I became more and more interested towards this. And with some of the concepts with this we have gone through 16, and some of the concepts, as what you said, Bhante, one of the things what I have noticed, we are trying to reach the top, and then whichever the direction that we go, I see that there are certain similarities. After all, it is about your own mind that you are trying to see and try to investigate and see how those thoughts arises and decays as well, like the Samudaya and the Nirodha. And I think a couple of days ago I asked a question as well, which I don't see the Nirodha the moment I see the Samudayas, and you sort of gave me a fantastic response to that. And so with this, I really enjoy this talk. I want to thank for what you're doing, and I want to sort of give that credit as well. So thank you so much. This is great for me, and I'm sure it is great for many of us as well.
Yeah. Teran Sarnai.
Teran Sarnai.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Really appreciate the wonderful sharing tonight. Bhante, there's just one last question. I believe you answered this last week, whether you will be conducting a retreat in Perth, Australia.
Yes, so I got the invitation. It's fairly confirmed. Now I'm working with the acquiring of visa. So they are organizing a retreat in Perth, Jahana Grove, in May 3rd to May 9th. 2024.
And who can contact if
someone
wants to register?
Yeah, that is Mr. Percy Asaratne. So he's the organizer. And Western Buddhist Australia, there's a Bhavana Society, like thing in the Western Buddhist Australia. Western, what's that called? Let me find out this thing. Western Australia Buddhist Society or something. So I'll give you more details, Jennifer.
Okay, sure, yeah, no problem.
They are called Sri Lankan Meditation Retreats, Western Australia. Sri Lankan Meditation Retreats, Western Australia. So they are the ones organizing it, scheduled from 3rd to 9th May.
Okay, that's great news.
Yeah.
I believe that's all of the question on my side, Bhante.
Okay, then we have spent a fair amount of time today, so it's a time to wind up. So all the merits that we have accumulated, through the Dhamma discussion, through the Dhamma teachings. So we'll share with all the celestial beings and past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And also we wish these merits help us also to understand Buddha's teaching, practice Buddha's teaching, and to realize the Buddha's teaching, and to end the suffering. So we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.